It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, we will meet Cynthia Martin, a 69-year-old National Masters weightlifting champion who had never picked up a barbell before she turned 64. But first, just about 10 years after her divorce, Kelly Kramer decided to deal with the emotional baggage left behind in the best way she knew how, by putting on a cabaret.
Tom is big and brawny with sensitivity. Dick is so romantic and complimentary. Harry is my soulmate and we talk so openly. I'd marry any one of them. Here's the travesty. That's the trouble with romance today. If a man makes me tingle, he's either not single or straight from the Joffrey Ballet. All the good men.
That's Kelly Kramer singing All the Good Men Are Gay, which is also the title of her one-woman show. She'll be performing it at Noche in Des Moines on January 31st. She lives and works in Des Moines, and you also might recognize her as one of the co-hosts of Iowa Outdoors on Iowa PBS, and she's on the line with me now. Hello, Kelly.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks. It's so great to be here.
Now, this show, this one-woman show that you're doing, is about your marriage and the end of your marriage. You were, in a nutshell, you were married to a gay man for 9 years, and that's why the two of you didn't stay together, but there's a whole lot more to this story, and we will get to that. But what made you think that you should tell this story in public, cabaret style?
Well, you know, Stephen Sondheim likes to say that the content dictates form. So I think if you have a story about your gay ex-husband, cabaret seems like the right art form to express it. So for one, it makes sense from that standpoint. But I wanted to start putting together some stuff for myself. And I thought, well, if I'm going to do a cabaret where I get to sing and tell stories, if I only get one shot at doing one, let's do the big one. Let's go big or go home. And so that's kind of part of the driving force. Plus, you know, it's good for processing your emotions, trying to create a narrative out of it. So I think there were a lot of reasons that fed into the choice to do a cabaret.
How long have you been toying with this idea?
Oh, for a long time. Well, doing a cabaret for quite a while. I mean, it's something I always kind of wanted to do. If I'm not traipsing around a state park for Iowa PBS, then I'm doing a lot of theater. So plays, musicals, that sort of thing. So it is kind of in my wheelhouse anyway. But the idea of doing this story specifically, probably 5-6 years. I think it's probably when I thought, oh, this could really work. And then I kind of shied away from it for a while and then got to the point where I thought, nope, we can do this. We can tell this story in a way that I think can be effective and interesting and engaging and entertaining. So,
well, and one of the things that you talk about in the show is how when you tell people that you're divorced and that your first husband or your husband was a gay man, people feel entitled to ask you a lot of questions. And I think with any time you hear, you know, oh, someone got divorced, we all have a lot of questions. You know, nosiness is just part of the human condition. But for some reason,
right,
because your husband was gay, people feel entitled to actually ask you these questions. Tell me what happens.
Yeah. Well, there's always a lot of natural curiosity when someone finds out that that's part of my history. I think, you know, I can't be an expert on it, but I think that it kind of follows from the fact that straight woman, gay man in a relationship has kind of become a sitcom trope. So I think people view it as a joke, which in their minds may invalidate it. And so they decide that it's just fair game. So I get a lot of really personal questions for people while we were together, after we were apart, about asking me to essentially justify the relationship. You know, why were you together? Why was he with you? Why did you stay together as long as you did? Why did you split up? People ask really personal sexual questions, and we talk about that a little bit in the show. But it feels like it starts to become a free-for-all. And I think for some people, there may be some genuine natural curiosity and they kind of want to learn. And I think some people ask those questions to try to get you to be a part of a joke. And so it's always kind of this attempt to just invalidate it.
Yeah, they seem to forget or not even consider that there is a lot of emotional baggage for you.
Right. You know, two people get married for all sorts of reasons, and usually one of those reasons is that there's a lot of love there. And so there are certainly funny things about us being together, and we talk about some of those in the show, but the fact that we were together to begin with isn't part of the joke, at least for me. And so I think people do forget that there were two people with feelings and emotions who tried to make something work that just wasn't sustainable. But I think people on the surface see it as the sitcom trope and think that it's just a free-for-all.
Well, and you're a very funny woman. So you have also tried to beat them to the punchline, too. Do you think that feeds into it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm at the point, this has been happening for years. So I've yet to find something that someone can say that I can't beat them to the punch about this relationship, right? So you just try to beat them to it. And there is a lot of humor in it. I mean, I can always see the humor. I could see it when we were in it. But it is a weird thing to kind of be asked to constantly justify choices you made when you were 23, when we got married.
A lot of us made a lot of suspect choices when we were 23, right?
Right. And it's an ongoing thing. I think it's always going to happen. I think people will always be asking me those kinds of questions. So you just have your stock responses and you're ready for them when they come.
Well, and okay, it had been about a decade since your divorce when you sat down to write this show. And in the process, you really needed to dig deep and revisit those good times, the times at the beginning that were full of love, that made you make the decisions that you made. What did that feel like to try to put yourself back in that place?
I think it was really, ultimately, pretty healing. Because when I sat down to kind of pull all of this together, it was really easy to find the hurt or the anger or the frustrating parts towards the end. But to go back and really find those good things, it took a little more digging and kind of remembering what those things were and being okay with dwelling in the good stuff. And so I think it led me down a path of finding a little more balance in how I remember all of it. And so that's really healing. I think there's kind of a healing power and a strength in looking back over something you've experienced and recognizing the good and the bad in it and trying to put that together and express it in something, whatever that thing is for you.
Right. Tell us a little bit about your love story. The two of you met when you were in college, right?
Yep. We met our first weekend at college. We went to a small liberal arts school just south of Indianapolis, and there were fewer than 1,000 students, so you kind of knew everybody pretty quickly. But we met our first weekend. We did not like each other that first meeting, but we quickly fell into the same crowds. We both did theater and had a lot of classes together. And so we became very good, close, fast friends. And we were really good friends for a couple of years and then thought maybe there's more here. So we started dating, and we dated for a couple of years and then got married.
The two of you had a lot in common, and there are obvious stereotypes here that you embrace in the show. But you met in theater, and you loved, both of you loved musical theater. But that's
absolutely
also a pretty nice foundation for a friendship and a romance.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And until that point in my life, I hadn't met anyone who knew the same obscure things about musicals that I knew. So there was a really quick connection between us and kind of a mind meld of sorts. You know, when two people, like, you just your brain start to function as one almost. So we were very close, and it was exciting to find someone like that. And I, you know, there's kind of the idea of whether someone is marrying their best friend or not, but I truly did. I definitely married my best friend, which then complicates things when the marriage doesn't work, because you're not just divorcing your spouse, you're losing your best friend in the process.
Right.
But yeah, things were really great between us for a very long time. We were very close.
When you sat down to pick songs for the show, I can imagine that picking some of the angry songs or the more desperate songs maybe was easier. Was it a little bit harder to find some of the happier songs, the love songs?
You know what? It was actually the reverse. It was harder to find the right anger songs that I felt really expressed what I was looking for and how I felt. Because I think the happy stuff was easy to pull together because there were so many options. I think every song in the show, there were probably three or four really great options I could have picked from. And in the end, I wound up picking things that had resonance for me within the relationship. A lot of the artists are people we really like listening to together, or songs that we listen to a lot. So that's kind of a little hidden bonus piece in the show that the average audience wouldn't know. But I know that it's going through the track list, almost all of them kind of fit into a little bit of a love letter to the relationship.
We're going to go out to the break with one of the maybe not angry, but sad, desperate songs. We're going to go with Grace Kelly. And as we start to play it, just briefly, tell us about this song.
This is a song from Mika. And it's the relationship. You're asking a lot of questions about essentially what can I do and what's wrong with me and why don't you love me more?
Let's listen.
Am I too dirty? Am I too flirty? Do I like what you like? I could be wholesome. I could be loathsome. Yes, I'm a little bit shy. Why don't you like me? Why don't you like me without making me try? I try to be like Grace Kelly, but all the looks were too sad. I tried a little Freddy. I've got an identity match. I could be brown, I could be blue, I could be flying in the sky.
That's Grace Kelly from The Cabaret. All the Good Men Are Gay, put together a one-woman show by Kelly Kramer of Des Moines. She'll be performing it at Noche on January 31st. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we will meet Cynthia Martin. She is a 69-year-old National Masters weightlifting champion from Marion, Iowa. But right now, we're talking about a new one-woman show. It's called All the Good Men Are Gay. It's by Kelly Kramer, and it tells the story of her marriage and the end of that marriage. She'll be performing it at Noche in Des Moines on January 31st. She lives and works in Des Moines, and also is the co-host of Iowa Outdoors on Iowa PBS. And so, Kelly, before the break, we were listening to Grace Kelly by Mika, and the song list in the show is so incredibly diverse. Were there songs that you immediately know would go into the show because you just love to sing them?
I think that there were things that I knew had to be in the show more because they were important to the relationship. And I have found that they are sometimes the more difficult ones to sing. So when we're rehearsing, I say, who picked this? This bright idea was this song.
Give me an example.
I only have myself to blame. Dream a Little Dream was our song at our wedding. And it's a deceptively easy song to it seems like an easy song to sing, but it is not as simple as it seems to make sure you're really doing what you need to do in it vocally. So Dream a Little Dream was definitely on the list. There's a song from Hedwig and the Angry Inch, The Origin of Love, that I've always really loved. And that was a show that he and I both really liked. So I knew that needed to be in it. So those were a couple of ones that were really obvious. Also, All the Good Men Are Gay, the title song, that was an obvious pick. but yeah, those were ones right off the bat that I knew I needed to figure out how to work them in the story structure.
Well, and speaking of the diversity of the music that you chose, let's listen to an artist that this is a song by an artist that I didn't expect to hear in the show. This one is One More Minute by Weird Al.
Do it
So Weird Al, was that a gimme that he would make it onto your song list?
No, that was actually one of the last songs that made it into the set list. I was trying to find the right anger song, and a lot of them I kept listening to were, you know, just pure on rage, which I thought, well, yeah, I felt that. But I think coming across the song and thinking about it, I loved how it's, you know, that doo-wop kind of calm, laid-back sound, but the lyrics are really just keep growing and growing, and how happy you are that this person is leaving. Because you'd rather endure something else even awful. I liked the surface calm, but the inner rage in it. So I think it was the last one to decide was officially in. But it's a lot of fun to sing and perform. And I had a lot of people afterwards say, oh, I couldn't figure out what that was, but I knew that I knew every word of it.
Because you sang it in your bedroom when you were a kid,
right? Right. I think people aren't expecting Weird Al. But I think, you know, we say the show runs the gamut from Weird Al to Judy Garland. And I think that just kind of feels pretty indicative of a show that I would put together. It feels right.
Well, and that Weird Al song comes at, it's sort of the emotional peak or the emotional climax of the show, because you really do get very personal and talk about your feelings of hurt and anger. And this relationship, it was built on friendship, it was built on love, and it was built on honesty. And one of the big questions that people ask you is, when did you know that your husband was gay? And I guess the big reveal is that you always knew. This was something you went into with your eyes open, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we were really good friends for 2.5 years, and during that time, we would talk about the men we were into. So, yeah, we always were open about it, and I always knew that was a component of the relationship. But I think as we were starting to date and eventually decided to get married, it was always something that we kept checking in on. The idea that, you know, if you're choosing to marry someone, you're choosing that person. And so there was always kind of a check-in, like, you're still choosing me, for all of the reasons that he had for that. And so that was a big part of that honesty between us from the beginning.
In the show.
And I think that surprises a lot of people when they learn that.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, the show, it's funny, it's affectionate. Were you worried at all about sounding homophobic or feeding feelings of homophobia?
In putting the show together?
Yeah.
Yes. I wanted to make sure I was being as respectful of all sides of that sort of situation as possible, because our situation is not uncommon. I mean, lots of people find themselves in a mixed orientation marriage where the two people in the marriage have differing sexual orientations. So I knew that people would come to this kind of from all sides of that situation. And I wanted to be as respectful of that as I could, because ultimately that's kind of one of the main themes. Let's all respect each other and each other's choices, even if they're not ones we would personally make. So I wanted to try to make sure I was being as respectful of people in the LGBTQ plus community who may have experienced this themselves or maybe in it themselves right now. And, you know, because we're kind of all in it all together.
Well, and in telling this story, I'm struck by the foundation that you and your ex built. You know, you were extremely young, but you were such good friends. You had so much in common. You were open and honest about your feelings and sexuality. And it seems like your chances were as good as anyone's at actually making a marriage work. Is there a little bit of vindication of being able to say that in public and say, hey, you know, we weren't being stupid. We had a shot at this.
Right. Yeah, I think a little bit. I think there's kind of, you know, claiming those choices and saying this wasn't so bad. This wasn't necessarily a failure. I think I don't know what the current amount is, but there was a point where I looked at the average length of marriages in the U.S. and I think it was something like 5 or 7 years. So I thought, well, then we were a successful marriage. We beat the average. you know, I wouldn't say every day was amazing, but, you know, what marriage is. So it just wasn't sustainable until everyone died. But, you know, we had a lot of good years there. And I think, you know, there are a lot of straight marriages or gay marriages that don't last as long as ours did. So there was definitely value there for both of us for quite a while.
You put yourself in some pretty impressive company in thinking about women who have been married to gay men.
Yeah, well, I think especially if you're a straight woman in this situation, you kind of become the butt of a joke to a lot of people, and it can feel really isolating. And so I want to make the point that we're in really good company. You know, Carrie Fisher had a very long time relationship with a gay man and had a child from that. But, you know, there's Liza Minnelli, and then there's, you know, the Queen Judy Garland. So I think we're in a nice club.
You threw Fran Drescher.
To be a member.
Right. You threw Fran Drescher in there as well. Is that?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Fran Drescher also, she and her ex-husband, he was gay, and they went on to make a sitcom about it. I can't remember what it's called, but they've been very public about that also. So yeah. Fran Drescher. Why not? Let's all be in the club.
So you first performed this back in September at Noche. This is the January 31st performance. It's an encore performance of the show. And the recordings that we're sharing today are recordings from that performance, right?
Yes. Yeah,
all right.
They were from the initial performance.
And it's pretty clear that the room is packed with people who love you and with people who already maybe know a little something about your relationship and your story. What was it like to get up there on stage and tell your story in front of that audience?
Well, a little terrifying, but also really empowering. I think there's a lot of power that can come from claiming your story and sharing it. So it felt good to do that. Also, you know, doing this in general had just been on my list for a while, so it felt good to accomplish that goal. But there were a lot of people there I didn't know also, and it was interesting to talk with them afterwards. I had a lot of people who came to say, part of your story is part of my story. And that was really interesting. I think I was so focused on just the performance aspect, I forgot that it might connect with people in a way, in a deeper way. So that was really nice too. You know, as an actor, you're kind of getting up and sharing parts of yourself all the time on stage. You might just be pretending to do it as a different person. So it was unique to do this as myself.
Right.
Drawing from those life experiences.
But
yeah. But, you know, because I would draw from this for all sorts of roles in other productions, but the audience doesn't know that. Only I know it. So I feel like I had kind of shared these parts of myself, but pretending to be someone else. And this time I was sharing them as myself. And it was a little terrifying at first, but it also felt really good to just own my story.
Well, you actually talk
so
about...
I would encourage anybody to find a way to own whatever your story is.
Yeah, cabaret isn't a choice all of us can make, but...
Right. But there's got to be some way to get it out there. Right? Write a letter to a friend even. But yeah.
Well, in your cabaret, you actually share the story of one of those sort of cathartic theater performances, because while you were going through this breakup and dealing with that on a day-to-day basis, you were also in the midst of doing a show that was about a marriage falling apart. Tell us about that.
Oh, yes, I was. So we had decided to get divorced, but we were still living together for the time being for a few weeks, because I was in a show and that's kind of all encompassing in someone's life. So we agreed it would be too hard for him to move out while the show was going on. So we're in this weird limbo state, but I was in a comedic musical called The Great American Trailer Park Musical, and I played a really funny character. I was wearing multiple types of glitter and cut off maternity shorts because the character was pregnant, and singing songs about a marriage falling apart while dancing with a toilet brush, actually. So, but he came to see the show, and there was one night where that one song in particular, he was right in my eyeline for all of my choreography. So it was a really surreal moment to experience. And then we sing that song in the show.
And speaking of him being in the audience, did he come see this show?
He did. He did come see this show. when tickets were about to go on sale, I contacted him because I thought he should hear about it from me and gave him a heads up. And he was apprehensive, but supportive, and happened to come. And that kind of added a whole extra layer to that performance that night. I think it was good to know he was there, but also a little bit terrifying, you know. And I can only imagine how that must have felt for him to be in the room and know that someone else is telling a story about your experience, but you have no control over it. kind of as we're talking today, I don't mention him by name, and there's nothing particularly identifiable, but there were certainly people in the room who knew that he was who he was and that he was in the room for the show. So it was a little heightened.
Yeah,
for sure.
So
he's been positive about it since then. He's been very positive about the results. So
right. And your present partner was on the stage with you in the band.
Yes. Yes. My partner Drew and I have been together for several years, and he plays drums. And so he's my number one drum call. So he's standing behind me during all of this. So he is an incredibly patient, supportive man to be willing to do that.
So, you can't make this stuff up,
all kinds of
Kelly.
Excitement.
Right, yeah.
No. Couldn't craft it any better if I tried.
Right. So how do you think going through all of this experience, and of course, you know, I can only imagine that the next performance will also be a really powerful experience for you, but having been through it once, written the show, performed the show, been there with that audience, how do you think it changed you?
I think there's a confidence that comes from having done it, just as a performer, but I think as a person who's still sometimes processing thoughts and feelings from the marriage, from the event of the marriage. I mean, it's not like it's an everyday thing, but, you know, I think working through it to create this gives me a little bit of a different angle on the hindsight of the relationship and what it is, and feeling like I'm able to speak about that, the good and the bad that comes from it, and what it is to kind of pick it up and move forward with that in your past. So I think those are kind of the main things that come from it. A confidence in owning that, I think.
The big finish of the show is the song "This Is My Life." Is that one you always knew you wanted to finish with?
No. And in putting a show together, you think, well, you've got to have a really good opener and you have to have a really good closer. And it took a little bit to find the right closer that I think gave a good sum up that resonated with me. But that was a song that my good friend, music director and pianist Ben Hagen came to me with and said, I think this is it. I think this is your mic drop closer. And I think he's right.
Yeah, it's a fabulous song made famous, I think, by Shirley Bassey. And
yep.
Shortly after you did the show the first time, it also was featured in a Sephora ad that was everywhere for a while. Did you feel a little bit robbed?
A little bit. How dare they? Yeah, well, you know, a great song is a great song. And anytime anybody recognizes that, that's just bonus.
Right. So we'll go out with the song and you may recognize it from that Sephora ad. But Kelly Kramer, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you for having me.
Kelly Kramer, her one-woman show, All the Good Men Are Gay, will be at Noche in Des Moines on January 31st. Tickets are on sale now, and we'll go out with This Is My Life. This is Talk of Iowa. Make me-